From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. You are very kind. Thank you. So back in 2005, we interviewed actor Tom Hanks in this show, and today we're going to interview his son, actor Colin Hanks. Colin Hanks has a daughter born just this year, so we've got to stay in the air long enough for her to grow up and get her own TV show so we can keep the streak going. But we're ready to hear from you right now. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Alex.
Hey, Alex, how are you?
I'm okay.
Okay, where are you calling from?
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, Milwaukee's a great town. I was about to say that Milwaukee has the best collection of corner bars of any town I've ever been in, but maybe you already know that.
They also have shorter streets.
Do they really?
So that they can have more corner bars.
Exactly. Every 15 feet is another corner. Well, welcome to the show, Alex. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, the new interim editor-in-chief of the San Antonio Express News, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi.
Hi, Alex.
Next, an alum of Second City and the Colbert Report, Mr. Peter Gross is here.
Hi, Alex.
And a comedian performing at the Music Hall in Portsmouth, New Hampshire on November 20th, it is Paula Poundstone. So, Alex, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off. Who's Carl this time? Carl Castle will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify two of them. Do that, you win our prize. Ready to go?
Yep.
All right, here's your first quote. It comes from a man who is not talking about flowers.
I enjoy flowers like everybody else.
No, that man was explaining why he might have said some interesting things to the ladies who worked for him once upon a time. Who was it?
Herman Cain?
Yes, Herman Cain. Is that right? Herman Cain was always a long shot. He raised even more doubts about his fitness for the presidency when it became clear that he does not know the first thing about lying about a sex scandal. Now, at first, Cain, he said he had no idea what the charges were about. Then he said, oh, yeah, there was that one thing. But we didn't pay out any settlement. And then it was like, oh, wait, we did pay that one woman, or maybe two women, a few months' salary, or maybe it was a year's salary, so they wouldn't talk about it. And, oh, yeah, I just remembered maybe it did happen, but it is still a lie. I swear I was only trying to order a pizza when I told the ladies to hold the sausage. That's all. He was in the pizza business. It could have come up. Politico, the online journal that broke the story, they came to him and they said, you know, we've got this story. What is your reaction? And they tried this for 10 days. They couldn't get a response.
And a reporter walked up to him and said, have you ever been accused of sexual harassment? And asked him over and over again. And Cain looked at the ground. And he didn't speak. And then he looked at the guy and he said, have you ever been accused of sexual harassment? And then they were like, no more questions.
Right.
So he's a Jedi.
Yeah.
I think maybe. He made more money in the 24 hours after the allegations came out than he had, like, in any other previous time.
Right.
And I think they should all do it. Romney should be like, I came on to somebody, but nobody would believe it.
He's terrible.
You didn't have sex with your wife.
It is true that Herman Cain does seem to have an amazing faith in his ability to talk himself out of anything, simply by wishing it were so.
You know what it is? Years of suggestive selling.
Really?
Yeah. You know, can I get a pepperoni pizza? Would you like a large? That's called suggestive selling. Did you
right.
know that?
I didn't
have you
know
ever
that.
Done that job?
No.
You know how they go, would you like fries
yeah,
with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's called
suggestive
selling.
I think suggestive selling is what he's in trouble for.
Yeah. Very good. Alex, here is your next quote.
Let them eat baklava.
That was a headline in the Wall Street Journal blog Market Watch talking about the economic crisis where?
Greece?
Yes, Greece. Very good. Yes. The situation in the country Greece is so complicated, we're going to try to explain it to you in terms of Greece, the beloved movie musical. So imagine that Frenchie decides to open a hair salon. So she borrows $100 billion from Rizzo. Then Frenchie blows all the money in cigarettes and hairspray and can't pay it back. And Rizzo says, I'll forgive half your debt if you stop buying all those malts. And Frenchie says, I love malts. So instead I'll go back to the drachma, which sounds like a cool nightclub but is really a currency. And then all the German banks collapse.
Wow.
Clear?
We go together like da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. They sing a song and they... Yeah. That's how it works. Now, what's happening right now is the Greeks don't know what to do because they could go on this austerity program, which would be brutal, or they could abandon the euro and go back to their old currency, the hero, which is a delicious sandwich meat they have in abundance. But if they did that, the rest of Europe, which loaned them all the euros, would be out of luck. Greece is basically the no-good sibling of Europe. France is saying to Germany, you lend him money? I told you not to lend him money. You just blow it. And Germany says, well, he said he's changed. And Greece is like, and this whole conversation is like just lying on the couch in its underwear saying, hey, guys, if the phone rings and it's the EU Central Bank, I'm not here.
I would like for them to actually use euros as currency because then they would have to buy euros with euros.
That'd be really fun.
And it would be like a great like Greek vaudeville routine.
That'd be hilarious.
How many euros for that euros? Yes. How many? How many euros do you want? How many are you going to give me for my euros? And so on.
Well, here's the thing. They're arguing over this right now at the G20 summit in the south of France, and President Obama is having a great time because, as the New York Times points out, the U.S. is bankrupt and powerless, so nobody expects him to do anything. So he gets to be the fun guy at the G20. He's been hanging out. He's been saying things like, hey, guys, let's go to my room and watch Transformers on pay-per-view. We can raid the minibar, or as you call it, Sarkozy, the perfectly normal-sized bar. Let me give you a noogie. You know, he's having a good time. Alex, here is your last quote.
First and foremost, I married for love. It just didn't turn out to be the fairy tale I had so badly hoped for.
That was somebody who was explaining her heartbreak at her divorce after only 72 days of wedded bliss. Who was it?
Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian, indeed, yes. Miss Kardashian is the star of the E! Network's hit show Keeping Up with the Kardashians recently. If you wanted to keep up with this Kardashian, you would have to marry an NBA player, televise the ceremony as a two-part special event, and then end the marriage before the thing was out of reruns. The reasons for the divorce were hotly speculated on in the press. He wanted to live a quiet life back home in Minnesota and raise kids. She wanted to keep working as the leading stain on our national honor. But she's been getting... do you watch this? Do you watch the Keeping Up... I had the crash course in Kardashian lore this week, and it's quite amazing.
I cannot bring myself to view that show.
The Kardashians as a family make more money per year than like the top four movie stars in Hollywood combined. They make $65 million a year.
Well, they're working less, so...
Why don't they buy Greece?
That's a thought.
Well, you know, you got to... have a little sympathy for her this much?
This much. Why? Why
because,
do you have sympathy
well,
for Kim Kardashian?
Well, someone once explained to me, it's not like marriage gets any better after the first year.
So maybe she made the wise choice. She got out with the getting was good.
She cut her losses early.
Yeah, I know.
How long were the Chilean miners trapped?
Longer than the...
Not longer than Chris Humphreys.
Wow. Yeah, longer than Chris... Carl, how did Alex do in our quiz?
Alex had a perfect game, Peter. Three correct answers, so Alex, you win our prize.
Well done, Alex. Thanks for calling. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Carrie, this week in Colorado, there's outrage after yet another performance-enhancing drug scandal. The winner of what competition has tested positive for a banned substance?
It wouldn't be one of those cup stacking things. Or No. not the thing where you pack the grocery bags.
No.
Can I have a hint?
It ate a can of banned substances, then ate the can.
A goat.
A goat. The Colorado State Fair champion goat, no less. It shouldn't be surprising. It's come to this. Said one journalist, quote, "The Colorado State Fair is basically the Tour de France for goats."
What do they do?
Wow.
What's the competition?
Well, you know, it's the big competition. It's a state fair type competition where they bring the animals out and they check the animals for whatever criteria they use to judge that animal. And
which
and
is what?
Goatliness in this case.
Yeah. Obstinance and headbutting.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Theodore the goat has been banned from future competitions after a urine test turned up a muscle growth drug. So if you're feeling down, keep in mind that there is such a job as goat urine tester and you don't have it.
What was the...
Now, is it two different things? Is it the person who gets the goat urine, who gets the goat to pee in a cup, and then somebody else analyzes it?
Well, it used to be, but with the economy.
No.
And what's the name of the goat? Is it Barry Bonds?
What's his
no,
name?
No, it's Ralph Palmeiro.
Mark McGuire.
Manny Ramirez.
That's the litmus test for what humans are doping, is if you can make a goat-sounding noise with their name.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Josh Klein from St. Augustine, Florida.
Hey, Josh, how are things in St. Augustine?
Oh, it's beautiful down here, nice and 60 degrees.
Oh, that's great. What do you do there?
I sell a medical device that's used in the operating room. It's a surgical laser scalpel.
Ooh, how cool. Can you use it to have sword fights if you got bored?
Maybe.
Yeah, hey. Well, Josh, welcome to the show. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Josh's topic?
I shall name my son Sue.
So parents are the worst. They strap you with a name like Apple, and then they force you to do things embarrassing, like go to middle school. All you can do is make the most of it. Well, our panelists are going to read you three stories of people who had a name they spent a lifetime regretting, finding out it could be a blessing. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Let's do it.
First, let's hear from Mr. Peter Gross.
The good people of Tipton, Indiana, liked to have a laugh at the expense of Dr. Michael Barf. No matter how often he told people his name was of Dutch origin and spelled with two A's, they just couldn't stop giggling. What's worse, patients weren't all that excited to use an OBGYN with his name. After all, when someone asks, "Oh, who delivered your baby?" it's kind of hard to say, "Oh, Dr. Barf, he was wonderful." And men don't need another reason to get queasy in the delivery room. The good doctor had accepted his fate until 2 weeks ago when he was driving home from the hospital and came upon a terrible accident. The school bus had flipped upside down in a ditch, trapping the children inside. Thinking fast, Dr. Barf retrieved an axe from his trunk and smashed open several windows, allowing every single child to crawl out to safety. Well, Tipton, Indiana, laughs no longer. The mayor has decreed that the date of the incident, October 21st, will forever be known as Barf Day. And acts of heroism in town are being referred to by a new name, says Police Chief Jordan Richardson. One of my officers got an old woman's cat out of her tree, and as he was leaving, she said, "Thanks for barfing, officer!"
You say it's your barf day. A name becomes a symbol for heroism in a small town. Your next story of giving love to a bad name comes from Kiri O'Connor.
The next time you hawk up a loogie, think of figure skating. Really. The Robitussin Company is hooked up with the Olympic gold medalist Peggy Fleming for a campaign seeking people with icky, cold, and fever-related names. Now, you may never have associated the lovely Ms. Fleming with the viscous secretion phlegm, but yes, Robitussin went there. And they want more. They're calling for all of you with cold and fever-related names. Come on down, Mr. Itchy, and I know you're out there. Announce your presence, families of stuffies. All you little Ms. Sneezes, now we really say bless you. You multiple Mr. Fevers, your temperature is up. The 100 of you named Mucus? Frankly, we really want to help you fill out the name change form. Sorry. If you register at the Robitussin website, you'll get a coupon and the thanks of a grateful nation for just being you.
Peggy Fleming becomes the first of people with names redolent of head colds. to register with Robitussin. And your last story of What's in a Name comes from Paula Poundstone.
It was a Facebook friend suggestion that brought Nickelodeon executive Mark Ellis's attention to 12-year-old SpongeBob SquarePants. I was on Facebook one day, and this thing pops up suggesting I follow SpongeBob SquarePants. I thought, hey, where's SpongeBob SquarePants? I contacted legal, and guess what? It's a kid's name. SpongeBob SquarePants is, in fact, a 12-year-old boy. My real friends call me Robert, says SpongeBob. But my real name is SpongeBob SquarePants. SpongeBob SquarePants Smith's mother loved the popular animated character and, frustrated by the common last name Smith, wanted to give her son a moniker that would really stand out. He's a great kid, says Nickelodeon Zealous. When we found out about him, we couldn't resist doing something for him. I mean, imagine weathering the storm of that name. They sent me sheets and tub toys, says SpongeBob. I sent them back. My name is SpongeBob SquarePants Smith. I don't laugh like that dude. I don't even like that show that much. I don't even like the beach that much. I am not yellow. I'm not a sponge. People can't do dishes with me. I told them I wanted them to donate science books to my school. They were cool about it. It's been a hard name to have, but my brother, Jigglypuff, has had it worse.
SpongeBob SquarePants Smith, a 12-year-old boy, comes to terms with his interesting name. So let me review then, in addition to that story from Paula, you also had from Peter, the story of the heroic Dr. Barf, whose name has now become a synonym for heroism, and from Kerry O'Connor, how the Robitussin Company is looking for people with names redolent of symptoms of head cold so they can reward them with coupons. Which of these is the real story in the week's news?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of intrigued by Peter's and Kerry's. I think I'm going to go with the Robitussin
story. You're going to go with the Robitussin story from Kiri. All right. Well, here is somebody with a name in question discussing their experience.
I've trusted Robitussin for many years, and I love the campaign of simple acts of relief that really celebrates and has fun with my last name, Fleming.
That was Peggy Fleming talking about the Robitussin campaign. You know what's funny about that? I've known about Peggy Fleming ever since she became an Olympic star, and it never occurred to me that her name had the syllable Flem in it, and now I will never be able to think of anything else. So good for you, Peggy, but good for you, Josh. You got it right. You've earned a point for Kerry O'Connor for telling the truth. You've won our prize, Carl's Voice in Your Home Answering Machine. Well done. Yes. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you for having me.
And now the game where we ask interesting people about uninteresting things. It's called Not My Job. Now, Colin Hanks is an actor who's appeared in a lot of great TV shows and movies, including The O.C., Mad Men. Now, it used to be you knew you made it when you got a guest spot on The Love Boat. Now it is playing a serial killer on Dexter. That's what he's doing now. Colin Hanks, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
It is a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you, Colin. Thanks for being here. So am I right about that? Do you like actors hang around Halloween and go, oh, I hope I get the serial killer role in this season's Dexter?
Well, yes, of course.
Are you going to be, I know in general the seasons tend to revolve around a single primary serial killer who's sort of Dexter's nemesis. Is that you this time around?
It is myself along with Edward James Olmos.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah, so it's the two of us that... that Dexter has to find.
This is the seventh season of Dexter or the sixth?
It is the sixth.
And does anybody ever on this TV show Dexter, which I have seen and enjoyed, ever look around and go, wait a minute, where are all these serial killers coming from? This is crazy.
Well, this is not the first time television has made, you know, sort of a strange and unbelievable coincidence. I mean, every time Perry Mason took a job... It wasn't originally to defend a murder case. It was always the person came to him for something entirely different, and then the very next morning they were accused of murder.
Well, just think about Cabot Cove.
Oh, yeah, and Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, yeah.
Murder
yeah.
People are getting killed left and right in this tiny little town.
Right. And then they had her character go to New York as if this should be daunting to someone who came from a small town where everyone's dead.
And it's also not too different from a lot of the sort of medical programs you have where invariably someone will come in complaining of So, oh, my stomach hurts, or I have some chest thing, and they go, oh, it's this. And then all of a sudden, some doctor realizes, but wait, it could be this.
Right.
And lo and behold, that's
it
what
is.
It was.
That's every
it's
episode
amazing.
Of House.
It's as yeah. if they're in a TV show. Now, we understand your father is also an actor.
Yes. He was on The Love Boat, by the way.
He was.
I appreciate that reference.
Oh, good. How has he dealt with your fame and success?
He's taking it poorly.
Really?
He's feeling a little bit older.
Yeah.
As he always said, you may be younger and taller and better looking, but I weigh more than you.
Yeah. I hate to ask this because I like to think well of the guy, but your father, Tom Hanks, does he ever try to sponge off your success?
Oh, every day.
Really?
Yes.
Somewhat more seriously, was it daunting to want to go into acting yourself?
Well, keep in mind, I'm going to be 34 years old in just a few weeks. So when I was younger, it was, you know, my dad dressed up in drag on Bosom Buddies, and that
right.
was what I was having to deal with at the time. And then around the time that I was into college was when he became statue worthy, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting thing, because all of a sudden I sort of realized, wow, he cannot go anywhere on this earth without someone going, hey, it's you. So it's kind of a hard thing to wrap your head around sometimes.
Hey, listen, we know you're big on Twitter. We followed you on Twitter. We know that you...
Oh, very good. I just followed you right now. I just found you.
Well, there you are. So now you're following me, which is very exciting.
Yes.
And your Twitter bio describes you as, quote, that guy from that one thing you think is way underrated.
Yes.
Unquote. What is that thing?
That thing apparently is everything on my resume.
There you are.
No, there's always someone who just says, you know, hey, man, that thing that the blank, movie blank, that's way underrated.
That's so, a great compliment, because they mean, like, I think it's good, but
yeah.
you should know a lot of people
yeah.
hate it.
A lot of people.
That thing that you did does not suck nearly as much as everybody else says
yeah.
it does.
Listen to the things they've said.
Oh, my God. It's terrible.
So I just sort of am taking that and embracing and running with it.
From your Twitter feed, we would say that you are somewhat obsessed with music. Is this fair?
This is a fair assumption. Yes.
And are you in a band? Are you a musician yourself?
I was in two very horrible bands.
They were underrated.
Yeah, they're better. They're better than everybody said, Colin.
I like that. I played bass guitar in high school and in college, and then I actually I fractured my thumb, so my bass career went bye-bye.
What was the name of the band, sir?
one of them... Okay. In combination, this is going to sound very strange.
That's why we ask.
The first one was called Pontius Pilate.
Okay.
I didn't know why. I just liked the name. I since found out who Pontius Pilate was.
Wait a minute. You didn't know?
I had no idea.
They did that great song, I Want to Wash Your Hands.
Yeah.
Very good. I love that.
The other one was called... The Underlords.
The Underlords?
Yeah,
Underlords.
They were both, let's just say they were both noble attempts.
Yeah.
Did you start those bands, or how did you get involved with them?
I did not start those bands. I joined those bands. I'm the quiet bass player.
And did you say what's the name of the band?
Yeah, I did.
And they said The Underlords.
Hey, listen, I just wanted to hang out with someone.
He was lonely. What can I tell
lonely.
You? We were talking to some people who knew you, and I want to confirm. I didn't put you on the spot here. We understand that you're a big hockey fan as well.
Yes.
Did you or did you not, sir, ever have your very own hockey mullet?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
That's worse than the Underlords.
Yeah,
I can deal with Underlords.
It was a glorious... hockey mullet.
Yeah.
That was just really, I mean, even then you just called it hockey hair. But come on, it's the hairstyle, you know. Show me another, you know, 13-year-old kid that's got a stellar hairstyle who is not the epitome of awkward, and I'll bow down to that kid. But
my son. He's a good-looking guy with great hair. I was just thinking, if your last name was, if you were Colin Honks, you could get a coupon from Robitussin.
I think Robitussin is way underrated.
I think so. Well, Colin Hanks, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Till Death Do We Part, or okay. At least until I get a better offer.
So, Kim Kardashian is getting a lot of grief for filing for divorce after only 72 days of marriage, as we've discussed, but compared to some other celebrity weddings, she and her husband, what's his name, practically grew old together. We're going to ask you three questions about other short-lived celebrity marriages. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Colin Hanks playing for?
Colin is playing for Crispin Brim of DeKalb, Illinois.
All right.
All right.
Crispin Brim.
Wow.
Here's your first question, Colin. Guns N' Roses singer Axl Rose may not appear to be the most romantic man. That's because he's really not. His brief marriage to his wife, Erin Everly, began when he popped the question, how? A, at 4 a.m, he said to her, marry me or I'll kill myself. B, he let her look under Slash's hair where he had hidden a ring. Or C, he said, you in the jungle, baby, the jungle of wedded bliss.
I'm going to go with A.
You're
going to
go with A. At 4 a.m, he said, marry me or I'll kill myself?
Yes.
Yes, that's what he did.
Wow. That is so romantic.
It is.
That's what I did.
That's called popping the question and popping the cry for help.
Yeah.
She said yes. They were divorced just a few weeks later.
Oh, wow, that's romantic.
Isn't it? Wasn't that a shock?
Romance.
Next question. The late actor Dennis Hopper was married to singer Michelle Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas for 8 whole days in 1971. What did Mr. Hopper have to say about his brief marriage much later? Did he say, A, quote, next time I get married, I'm going to spend a little time with the lady first. B, quote, 7 of those days were pretty good. Or C, quote, no big deal, I return a lot of the clothes I buy, too.
I'm going to go with B just because that made me laugh.
7 of those days were pretty good?
Yeah.
That's right. That's
all
what
right.
He said.
Wow.
Talked to the New York Times in 2005. He said, 7 of those days were pretty good. The 8th day was the bad one. All right, last question. One of the more famous of the celebrity marriages in the 1960s was the brief joining in wedded bliss of Ernest Borgnine and Broadway star Ethel Merman. In Merman's autobiography, the chapter My Marriage to Ernest Borgnine consisted of what? A, the words, wait a minute, did I marry Ernest Borgnine? B, a full-color reproduction of Edgar Munch's painting The Scream. Or C, a blank page.
Well, I don't know. Why don't we go for B?
You're going to go for B, a reproduction of Munch's painting The Scream?
Sure, why not?
No, actually, it was a blank page.
That was my gut instinct.
I know.
What would Ernest Borgnine have done?
Marry Ethel Merman for 32 days.
32 days?
32 days. He explained that he ended their marriage after that brief period because of Ethel Merman's incessant complaining that more people were recognizing him in the street than her.
Oh.
It's made her very mad.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Colin Hanks do in our quiz?
Colin, you had 2 correct answers, so you win for Crispin Brim.
Yes.
Well done.
Nice.
Colin Hanks is starring in Dexter on Showtime this season. Colin Hanks, thank you so much for being with us.
Bye, Colin.
Bye, everybody. Thank you so very much.
Bye-bye. In just a minute, Carl eats all of his Rima beans in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Peter, a luxury designer, has created a special edition iPad. It's solid gold. It's encrusted in diamonds. But in case that's not exclusive enough for you, it's also inlaid with what?
Gold and diamonds are already on there.
Yeah, it's got gold, it's got diamonds. That's old school. That's not fancy enough. No, to make it really fancy, really special, really that sort of thing that nobody but you has. It's also got what in it?
Your DNA.
No, it's a good guess, though. It's sort of like, it's the Jurassic iPad. 65 million years in the making.
It has dinosaur.
Dinosaur.
DNA?
Close enough. It's got dinosaur bones.
Bones.
It's got Tyrannosaurus Rex bones. Even, yeah, even among the 1% of the richest people, there's 1% that are dumber than the rest. And created especially for them, it's the Stuart Hughes $8 million iPad. $8 million seems like a lot. It might be worth it if it came with a protective case made of $8 million. But no, this comes, you know, with diamonds and gold and shards of dinosaur bone. Are we so bored with precious gems and stones that and metals that we now need dinosaur bones to impress each other? Like the great predators that once ruled the earth, they're now reduced to being bling? Was that a comforting thought as they passed into extinction? It's okay. Someday some rich moron will play Angry Birds on us. But the T-Rex was happy. It was like, well, great. At least somebody found something to do with my arms. Paula, Professor Diedrich Stapel is one of the most prominent research psychologists in the world. He has done study after study proving, for example, that just thinking of eating meat makes people more selfish and that being in a messy room makes people more racist. This week, a little flaw was discovered in his work. What?
His sample group is one.
No. Well, that actually is not far off the case.
He uses a doping goat.
No.
He smokes a doping goat.
I'll give you, he's sort of the James Fry of social scientists.
It's not true.
Right, he made it all up, basically, is what they discovered.
Oh, I feel awful.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people I've accused of racism.
Professor Stapel published all kinds of studies about the intricacies of human behavior and moods, the kind of things we often feature on this show, and it was all nonsense. Stapel apologized. He said he was ashamed of his actions, but he explained that when you put men in prestigious, well-paid academic jobs and allow them to hang around attractive young students, studies show they tend to start making stuff up.
Yeah, this kind of vindicates my way of thinking for a number of years now, Peter, which is that a lot of the studies, I remember one time, there was a study about cat food, and it was by the Whiskers Foundation. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, a lot of times I found the studies to be a little faulty.
If I remember correctly, that study indicated that owners were jealous of their cats.
Yes, I recall that. And after having a bowl or two of Whiskers,
we were like, this can't be true.
I became suspicious.
Well, we thought in particular, Paula, that you would like this, that your skepticism, at least in this guy's case, has been vindicated. Kiri.
Yes.
Kiri, this week a new cable station launched in Pittsburgh, and it's all what? All the time.
A new cable station? I have no idea. It's all cat videos.
Worse.
Worse?
I'll give you a hint. It's like it means that 24/7 you can call in and get your Antiques Roadshow Feather Duster premium.
Whatever you call those things. The things where you have to phone in money. And
exactly. Out. To who?
PBS.
Yes. It's all PBS pledge drives all the time.
Whoa! Wow. Like from around the country?
I want to move to Pittsburgh.
Now, an all pledge drive channel does raise questions like, where the hell is the remote? And when will sweet, sweet death come for me? Station manager Deborah Ackland says, quote, a lot of people really like pledge programming, unquote, which may be the saddest thing ever said about America.
A lot of people really like pledge drives. Sounds like something that woman's mother told her.
Yes.
She was like, what do? I organize pledge drives. A lot of people really like pledge drives.
Well, apparently they do, because PBS, as you may know, for their pledge drives, they program things other than they normally broadcast. They got the Suze Orman financial specials and three tenor concerts, and that brings in an audience who are willing to give money when people in tuxes ask them to. And apparently, people actually like pledge drive programming in PBS because it is not the usual programming on PBS. They're like, what's this Frontline nonsense? Where's my John Tesh concert interrupted by begging?
What if they end up just with way too much money because people like it so much? What if it turns out that they just discontinue their programming altogether?
And just go all pledge all the time.
Yeah, just have an empire of collecting.
Yeah, they'll be like, we have to raise money for great shows like pledge drives.
Right. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the contact us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and check out the How to Do Everything podcast from the producers of Wait Wait. This week, how to look slightly less disgusting while eating ribs. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Ellen Stobaugh.
Hey, Ellen, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Where are you calling from?
Santan Valley, Arizona.
Santan Valley?
Yes, sir.
What do you do there?
I work at a middle school as a sign language interpreter.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I work with one student. And, yeah. I help out in the classroom with the other kids. So.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure you and the kid have a good relationship.
Yeah, it's the fourth year I've been with her, so it's real fun working with a teenager.
When you, I've wondered this, and I can ask you. So you've one kid, and that's who you work with. You interpret for her, so she can participate in the classroom.
Right.
Do you two ever get bored and just start talking to each other about what's going on in the room?
Oh yes.
Really? Do you ever say, "Oh, don't bother listening to this. It's just the same old lecture as yesterday. What do you want to talk about?"
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, I'm not that bad, but you know, if it's something important, then I'll make her pay attention. But.
Do you gossip about the other people in the room, knowing that they don't know that you're doing it?
Yeah.
Oh yes. Well, Ellen, welcome to the show. Carl Castle, of course, is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in the two of them, you will be a winner. Here's your first limerick.
Okay.
Statistical research befuddles what we footballers do in our huddles. It turns out that men need a hug now and then. More than women, we men need some...
cuddle?
Yes, cuddle. Very good. According to researchers from the University of Sex in the City, there's some actual university out there, men are more into cuddling than women. In fact, a third of British women say they, quote, can't bear it. 77% of women admit to engaging in what's called the hug and roll, wherein they cuddle their partner until he falls asleep and they immediately roll over. Well, this seems mean, the hug and roll. It's nicer than what some men report experiencing, the hug and run screaming. Here's your next limerick.
I hate that brown sludge brewed in Turkey, but I still need that jolt to feel perky. Instead of the drip, I will chew on this strip. I will get my caffeine from beef.
Jerky?
Yes. Scientists at an army lab, very good, have created... a new beef jerky stick that contains as much caffeine as a cup of coffee to, quote, give even the sleepiest soldier that up and at him boost. So always in the cutting edge, Starbucks will soon release the frothy beefaccino.
It's probably really hard to catch those cows that have all that caffeine.
I know.
He's going to be a hell of a cowboy to catch that cow.
They also have a product, this sort of fortified applesauce they're calling Zapplesauce, to give to what they call war fighters, the guys who are out there in the field. And they say that, you know, they want this product to look and seem like applesauce, so they'll want to eat it, because the generals just don't have time to make airplane noises and get them to open up for the applesauce. So.
Toddlers love it.
Zapplesauce. Here is your last limerick.
Colonoscopy comes with no flowchart. So I put on my headphones and go smart. To the great magic flute, I'll probe someone's chute. I'll perform at my best hearing.
Oh, God, I don't know.
The magic flute?
Flute, no.
No, I think you've already won, so I will give it to you. It is, in fact, Mozart.
Mozart.
Scientists say that listening to Mozart helps surgeons perform better colonoscopies. Apparently it has something to do with improving their ability to navigate spatial patterns.
I'll find out on the 29th.
Well, if that's the case, may I suggest bringing along some of Mozart's more famous compositions. For example, La Colon de Figaro and Eine Kleine Butt Music.
Well,
What were colonoscopies like before Mozart?
It was terrible.
They must have been
really
so
rough.
Difficult.
It was hard.
What's the date again?
29th.
Do you want to call and check in with her?
I just would like to give a thought to her that day.
All right.
Okay.
Carl, how did Ellen do in our quiz?
Ellen had two correct answers, Peter. So, Ellen, I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Peter Gross and Harry O'Connor each has 3 points, but Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right. So, Paula, you are in third place, so you'll be up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. Thousands of people across the Northeast were without power after last weekend's huge blank.
Snowstorm.
Right after a court battle to stay in the UK, WikiLeaks editor Blank lost his fight against extradition and will be sent to Sweden.
Ange, what's that guy's name?
It's Julian Assange.
That's it.
After his second physical in office, Blank's doctor pronounced him in excellent health and tobacco-free.
Mr. Obama?
Yes. A TV reporter in Ohio blanked in order to report the story of the arrest of a topless woman.
Went topless.
He
got arrested.
No, he took his shirt off. He did not get arrested. Amazon announced this week that it was setting up a free ebook lending library for blank users.
Kindle users.
Yes.
All right.
A plan by two managers of a Domino's Pizza in Florida to improve business backfired when they were arrested for blanking.
Didn't they burn down the other restaurant?
Yeah, they burned down a Papa John's.
Yeah, that can happen. That can happen. That's
so,
just
you know,
good business.
It seems like a good idea when your business is struggling. You eliminate the competition.
Yeah.
So that people have no more choice.
Yeah.
But to eat your crappy pizza.
When you, in the pizza business, there's two choices.
Right.
You know, one is run for president. And the other is burn down the competition.
Well, Herman Cain's looking pretty good now. He's not an arsonist.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cain, not an arsonist. 2012.
Point Cain, yeah.
Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. She now has 10 points and the lead.
All right.
I've set the bar kind of high.
We flipped a coin. Peter's elected to go last, so Kira, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Police in riot gear clashed with protesters in blank who attempted to close the city port.
Oakland.
Right. John Boehner this week set a Thanksgiving deadline for the 12 congressional members in the blank working to reduce the deficit.
Super committee.
Right. The jury heard closing arguments in the trial against the doctor charged with blank's death.
Michael Jackson.
Right. JetBlue issued an apology Monday after more than 100 passengers were blanked for 7 hours.
Left on the runway in the plane.
Right. A news broadcast in Canada was nearly derailed when the sports announcer blanked.
I had a giggle fit.
Won the lottery on air.
Whoa!
Rodham, the mother of Secretary of State Blank, died this week at age 92.
Hillary Clinton.
Right. This week, Apple acknowledged that there are battery problems with the new Blank and that they would be fixed soon.
The Apple iPhone 4GS.
Yes. iPhone, yes. Students and staff in Sweden were shocked when a cafeteria lady responded to complaints about the food by blanking.
Throwing it at them.
No, by doing a pole dancing routine. Sick of students complaining about her food, the lunch lady removed her apron, let down her hair, grabbed a pole, and started pole dancing. Officials say, although it was inappropriate, the pole dancing outburst had 2 effects. It made people aware of the terrible food and finally answered the question of why the school cafeteria was equipped with a stripper pole. Carl, how did Kiri do on our quiz?
Kiri had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 15 points, and Kiri has the lead.
Well done. All right. You know what I'm going to ask? I'm going to ask you how many Peter needs to win.
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
You can do that, Peter. Here we go. After much public outcry, Bank of America decided not to charge a fee for using a blank.
Debit card.
Right. On Thursday, an appeals court overturned the FCC decision to fine CBS for Janet Jackson's famous blank during the 2004 Super Bowl.
Wardrobe malfunction.
Right. Family Radiohead Harold Camping announced he was resigning after 3 failed attempts to predict the blank.
end of the world.
Right. Talking on CNN this week about the crush Muammar Gaddafi had on her, Blank described it as weird and a bit creepy.
Condoleezza Rice.
Right. On this week, Daniel Craig began filming Skyfall, the 23rd movie in the Blank franchise.
James Bond.
Right. On Tuesday, the day that the season was to have started, there was still no sign of a deal between owners and players in the Blank.
NBA.
Right. A woman in England was carded while buying alcohol and was turned away for not having ID, even though Blank.
She was a 90-year-old woman.
She's close enough. She was 92.
Wow, that's pretty close. Wow.
The clerk. Pretty close. The clerk could not be sure 92-year-old great-grandmother Diane Taylor was over 18, which is the drinking age in England. Taylor offered her senior's bus pass and even her pacemaker card as proof. But the clerk wouldn't budge, saying, "You're not the first teenager to try the I've got a pacemaker and a walker trick, young Missy." Carl, did Peter do well enough to win?
He needed 7 to win outright, and he had 7 correct answers. So with 17 points, Peter Gross is this week's champion.
Well done. Very nice. Sam, you saw, and you kicked some butt. Now, since Kim Kardashian made $18 million on her wedding, we're going to ask our panelists what the next celebrity money-making scheme will be. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and ITVS, offering PBS documentaries, including programs from the series Independent Lens, like Operation Filmmaker, at iTunes under PBS Indies. The Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections and celebrating National Adoption Month at aecf.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall, assisted by Jessica McLeod. Our intern is Hannah Withers. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next big celebrity money-making scheme? Peter Gross.
Out-of-work boxer Mike Tyson will take millions to change his name to Mike Tyson Chicken Nuggets with Limited Rib Meat.
Kerry O'Connor.
TV show Herman Cain's Alleged Dating Game.
And Paula Poundstone.
Justin Bieber Baby Diapers.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Peter Gross, Kerry O'Connor, Paula Poundstone. Thanks to all of you for listening. You're fabulous. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.